Hey,
you're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
An incredibly awesome guest on the show, we have Dr. Catriona, who is a science communicator and educator, amongst many other awesome things. Welcome to the show, Dr. Cat.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been a long time listener and fan, so it's finally happening.
And there's been a few false starts, but we're here.
Yeah,
and
we're good to go.
we can do this. So thank you so much for coming in between your busy schedule. I know you don't think you're famous, but I definitely think you're famous.
Oh, well, thank you.
What is your job?
That's not an easy question. I do a few different things. So I do work with the University of Melbourne teaching science communication to research students, and that's with the wonderful team, Jen, Michael, Graham, Lyndon. And it's fabulous to work with students and over the course of 12 weeks, see how they sort of the different ways that they try to sort of shape their research stories and think about how can they communicate their work to different audiences. So that's one thing that I do. I also work at Museums Victoria, which within that umbrella encompasses a few different things. My main role is something called learning facilitator. So I present science shows and workshops to audiences of all different ages. A lot of them are for school students, but we also focus on early learners and adults and family audiences. But things that I've picked up along the way include working for the marketing and communications team doing ScienceWorks social media. So I've sort of hijacked their Instagram and Facebook, and I put out content and think of really wacky scientific facts to share every week. I create some songs as well that highlight different programs and exhibits. And I also have another role where I work on the Science is a Superpower video series, which is now an award-winning video series, which is amazing. It's a video series that was created with the intention of empowering young girls and non-binary tweens to boost their STEM skills and confidence in science and their interest in it. And it's quite amazing that it wasn't explicitly stated, but the fact that all of the presenters, female and non-binary, people noticed. And yeah, so it's wonderful to do all those sorts of different things. And thirdly, I work for the Royal
Fourthly.
Society. Did you say fourthly?
I'm pretty sure we're up to fourthly.
Well, I mean, the third organization is the Royal Society of Victoria. And I am their senior editor for the Science Victoria magazine, a monthly magazine that comes out that really showcases the research that's going on here in Victoria and how we're coming up with solutions to global challenges. And I also chair the National Science Week Victorian Coordinating Committee to try and get science out there into the community. So those are all the different things that I do, but it means that no day is the same.
Yeah, no. that's a dynamic puzzle to pull together every week, I imagine.
Like even the same day, swap hats. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of elements of all of those things that I'm interested in, and I have a suspicion that there's definitely going to be listeners who are going to be quite jealous of a number of those jobs.
I'm pretty fortunate.
I suspect it's not just fortune. I suspect you've also worked quite hard to get to where you are. Now I need to think of a place to start. You mentioned the joy of watching students learn how to shape their stories. Mm-hmm. I guess, what have you seen that journey look like for students? Because that's a huge journey if you've never thought about how to tell your story and then getting it to a point where it can be shared. What does that look like for people?
Well, it looks different depending on the student and where they're already at, because people will come to us with various levels of experience in terms of some of them may have written things before, others haven't, or some of them will have delivered oral presentations before and others haven't. So I think the learning journey is different for every person, and it's not just based on experience, it's also their field, because, you know, there is naturally some particular scientific concepts that can be harder to convey to a wider audience compared to something like what I was researching, which is the immune system. And I mean, I'm not saying the immune system is simple, it is complicated, but people can immediately go, oh, okay, this helps me fight diseases or whatever. Like, there's like this sort of link or this connect. So yes, some students struggle with that a little bit. But what is absolutely amazing is when some students are from the maths and stats department, or maybe they're doing like theoretical physics, they come to us and their first sort of assignments can have some jargon and technical language. I'm not saying that this is from all of them, because I don't want to like put anyone in a box, but sometimes they, and it's not just in these fields, but they can come to us with things that are a little bit difficult for even someone like me who has kind of ventured into different types of sciences. It can be difficult to understand. But then we sit down, we have a chat, and we're like, okay, what's an analogy we can use? Or what's a way that you can think about, you know, connecting to your audience? It doesn't necessarily have to impact their lives, your research, but what's the value? Why do we care? And when we open up that question of why do we care, it just blossoms and it blooms. So I have seen some incredible students who the reason why I said maths specifically is because I have actually, like, in my mind, I have a few math students in particular who came to me at the beginning of semester just going, I don't know how to share this with anyone. And they came up with like these amazing analogies. And I'm just thinking about like donuts and puddles and all sorts of different things. And it just so clearly explains what they're doing. And I'm like, this is amazing. You've got your story. You've got your thing that you can just draw on all the time now, and you want to talk to other people about your work.
Which can obviously happen anywhere, anytime. You kind of need to be prepared with that story in the back pocket.
Yeah.
It also sounds like a cool job in that you get to like hear about cutting edge research.
Yeah, it makes me feel like I am somewhat still close to the pulse of research, because I realized that research wasn't for me, but I'm still fascinated by it. And so I do get to hear about things that are happening behind the scenes before, you know, things are actually published, because otherwise everything's, you know, you've just got to wait until you go to conferences or things are actually published to hear what people are working on and what they're doing. So I get to hear about all the different things that people at the university are doing and sort of help shape the way that they then go on and share that work at conferences and in publications and things. But it actually ties in well with my work for Science Victoria, that magazine, because sometimes I'll tap students on the shoulder and go, you're doing this incredible thing. Everyone should know about it. Why don't you write? Or like, how can I help you get the word out there?
That was actually going to be one of my next questions, is like, there's obviously like a common thread between all your current roles in like that public facing and I guess inviting people into science and making that accessible. How do you find they sort of like feed each other and contribute to each other?
Yeah, well, I work with people at all different ages, which is quite fun, and it is the fact that I do have these different roles, but it also means that the people that I'm in touch with, that network is quite big. So it works well. I've already sort of mentioned with the Royal Society of Victoria and writing Science Victoria and putting that together as a magazine, it means that I know people who are doing the research, who are doing the work, to kind of tap on the shoulder and put them forward for things. But also my work with the RSV and the University of Melbourne means that at ScienceWorks I can be chatting to kids and they ask questions about, like, you know, why is this useful? You know, what sort of opportunities are there available to me? And I'm like, well, all of these things, and I can tell them about some of the hot things hot things in science right now. Yeah, so they are all different, but they are sort of connected, and I do like that I can bring a bit of myself to all of them, and I can bring bits of each of them to my different roles.
Because I'm also sort of thinking that the role at ScienceWorks would kind of give you cred with uni students as well. That like, if this person is brave enough to stand up in front of a group of U9s and talk about science, well, okay, this person, sure, they can teach me how to do some communication as well. So it's
You clearly understand that U9s can be one of the most challenging audiences.
One of the most challenging, but also like if you get them on side, one of the most rewarding.
Totally. You like sort of break down those walls and they're with you and it's fun. But yes, and also I think because any of the students that I teach that are interested in science communication, if they hear that I work at ScienceWorks, they're like, that is like dream job, that's so fun. Yeah.
This might be a tricky question to answer, and so you're welcome to tell me get lost, but I feel like it's quite common for particularly, not necessarily in the early stages of a science communication job, but in a lot of science communication roles, to be doing this sort of like jigsaw puzzle of multiple sort of like putting together this, we'll call it a portfolio. And that obviously comes with a lot of opportunities and a lot of challenges. How are you sort of finding that? Like, my guess would be you may not want to know. I'm not going to ask you that. I was going to say, do you want to do it forever? That's not a kind question.
I'm happy to answer it.
Oh, yeah? Okay. I think there's a lot of people who'd be really interested because science communication is such a, like, desirable but also challenging space to get a foothold in.
Yeah, the way I got my foothold in was by volunteering to do different things. I actually started off with tutoring. Tutoring, high school students and primary school students first, but then sort of working as a volunteer in homework groups and then really thinking, okay, I like working with students and young people. But then I was a tutor and demonstrator at the university as well. And that was kind of my entry into science communication. And then the more I started going to conferences and sharing what other people were doing, back when Twitter was a really big thing, I went to conferences and thought, I'm going to summarize all of the talks, every single talk in a tweet. And that was a fun challenge to just sort of share, this person is doing this work and it's great, without, you know, giving away, you know, their content, which is a balance, I think, you know, trying to give enough, but also not steal their own thunder. But that kind of made me go, all right, science communication is this perhaps thing that I might pursue. And so I just started by volunteering for the Royal Society of Victoria and now they pay me. It's great. But it's because I proved myself after some time. And they're not the only organization I volunteered for. Like I approached the Royal Society of Victoria and the Convergent Science Network, and I approached the heads and I was like, what can I do for you? Can I write for you? Can I, you know, do anything? And they sort of took me under their wing and said, yes, okay, you can help us out. And then the more I did that, the more, I guess, I started building that portfolio. So you mentioned that my career is a portfolio sort of different jobs. It started off with, as a PhD student, just doing all of these different things and as many different things as I could. And I still kind of feel like that's how I'm going about my life. And I can manage these jobs. And so I do it. But in terms of whether I would do this forever, I don't think it's sustainable. I don't have one full-time job, but I work way more than full-time. So, and I think, you know, it's important to acknowledge that that isn't sustainable, and it does affect my relationships and things like that. And I'm trying to learn to say no more and think about what really is aligned with my goals and values. And even if a lot of things are aligned with my goals and values, what's going to help me have the most impact or what, how can I achieve, I don't know, reach my potential best? I feel like I have more to give. I'm not there yet. And I need to work out how I can get there. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
It does. I think I answered a couple of questions, which is really cool. And I think it's a really interesting space that, like, you're in where you're at that point where there's this, like, flourishing of opportunities, and you do actually have to say, like, there's this tipping point that happens in your life where you're just desperate and you'll just be like, please let me volunteer and all that sort of stuff. And then you sort of hit this, you get past it, and suddenly there's too many things. And without having that, like, clear path, it's impossible to say no, because you don't know if you're giving up the right things.
Yeah. Still trying to find that. And something I would say as well, in terms of, like, time management and balance and things, like, I still have a physical diary because I don't trust with my different accounts that everything will be in there if I just have a virtual calendar. So yeah, it does mean that in one day I might be jumping from, like, you know, one job to a meeting for another job and then back. But I feel like I've learned to be very quick on my feet and go, okay, on this day I'm going to be doing this. Let's do it. Let's go.
And that's got to be great for your brain, right? The agility and, oh no, it's gone. Oh, well, that idea went. Yeah. So lots of things going on. Okay. You've mentioned working with young people. You're obviously not afraid of them, which is, like, a good start. I'm very curious if you have considered, like, a traditional teaching role, and if you have decided not to, like, what that thought process was.
I have considered it. I considered to teach for Australia for some time, thinking it would be a good chance to study while also working and kind of seeing how I go in a classroom. I have thought about it, but I feel like it's really, really fun to have a group for a short period of time, you know, throw all of my energy at them and hype them up and spark their curiosity and just get them really excited and then hand them back to their teachers. Partly it was an experience of InterScience, which is a great volunteering program that puts university students in with schools. And I was paired with a Year 9 class, Year 9 boys. And I found that a little bit challenging. It wasn't the easiest group for me to connect with and work with. I did, as you said, like, when you get through, it is so rewarding. And so I did get that. But that was just one of the things that made me go, maybe classroom teaching isn't for me. I would love to, you know, work with people and really build that rapport over time, which is what I feel like I get with my university students, even though it's a shorter period of time. It is only one semester that you're really connecting with them and working with them, but then I keep in touch. So I know it's not the same as traditional classroom teaching, where you get, like, you know, that full year. And then you can actually, if you teach them when they're early, whether it's primary school or secondary school, like, you see them as they grow through the whole school. Yeah, that would be great. But I don't know, I really enjoy working with all sorts of different people. And it means that I can present the same show again and again and again to different audiences and connect with them. And I tailor every single show. So while I am performing the same content, the way it's delivered is different. And I'll add, like, different facts each time, depending on the vibe from the audience or what they're asking about. So the fact that everything's different just, you know, it's fun for my brain. My brain likes it.
No, that's cool. And I think that, like, that entirely makes sense. I think it's just often a career path that people, like, oh, you like talking about science, you should become a science teacher. And I think it's always interesting to hear sort of both paths as to.
Yeah, there are definitely pros to each side. Like, I do think it would be a very rewarding career, and I would also have great impact there too, but I've just found that I really enjoy what I'm doing now, so I'm gonna stay with it.
Yeah, fabulous. I do wanted to congratulate you on the award-winning Science as a Superpower. How did that come about? Like, not the award, but the concept.
Well, I don't know, because, like I said, I didn't initiate it, so I'm much more heavily involved in season 2 than I was in season 1, but I'll talk to it anyway. Okay. All right. So we wanted to focus on science sort of superpowers that are a little bit different to the traditional branches of science that you usually think about. So we have five superpowers: strength, curiosity, calmness, kindness, and energy, which sounds like it doesn't quite fit there. But yeah, they're all different sort of ways of thinking about science. And I think one of the standout ones for me initially thinking about it was kindness. How is kindness a superpower? But if you think about it, the way that we working on conservation projects, that's kindness. You know, we're thinking about how can we be kind to the environment and be kind to flora and fauna that have been here for so long. And also, if we're designing robots and AI, if we're thinking about robot companions, how can we think about the end users and incorporate empathy and kindness into the design? So yeah, we've sort of thought about how we can weave these different superpowers into different fields of STEM and areas of STEM. So yeah, it was about, you know, coming up with some scripts to get people to talk to their different specialties and their different fields. So that was season one of the videos, but then we developed workshops so that it could be like more of a hands-on tailored learning experience for girls and non-binary people. So we have created five workshops based on those five superpowers where people can come in for the day and do a sort of a design challenge where they get given a problem and they have to solve it using these superpowers, and they learn from experts in different fields as well. And most recently, based on season one, we had like a whole festival, and that was a massive team effort to bring that together. But we essentially just took over ScienceWorks and the entire building for the weekend to highlight these different superpowers, and it was incredible. We thought, oh, maybe we'll get like 30 volunteers or something, and we had 70 people volunteer their time to be part of this festival and engage people in STEM, which was just brilliant. We had like robots going around, we had interviews with engineers, we had, you know, the Mohs scale of hardness, we had that but candy forms. Kids to go, okay, this candy is harder than this one. Yeah, and now we're working on season two, and I'm much more involved with that one, so I feel like that one's closer to my heart. But yeah, we've got five new superpowers that we're going to feature, and the videos will be coming out on the International Day of Women and Girls in Science next year.
That is so cool. And that is a mammoth effort. Like, I don't think people really understand how much it takes to produce a video.
Yes.
Like, that doesn't look rubbish. It is hard. Oh,
we have the brilliant Digital Life team. Museums Victoria has a team of people who are very skilled in filming and producing these sorts of videos. But, you know, they come to me for the science and the scientific accuracy. And then we also get presenters and the museum collections managers. And it's just sort of like everyone came together for these. And it was a great team effort.
That's fabulous. Well done. And good luck with the next season.
Thank you.
I can't believe there's another five superpowers in science. Just sort of...
Just hang in there that we haven't spoken about yet.
Just waiting there, and I'm not going to ask what they are because that sounds embargoed.
I mean, you can ask, but that will be my answer.
Yeah. The other thing that you mentioned was the social media management. How are you, like, are you enjoying that? Because it can be such a, like, awesome, but also such a challenging environment to, you know, produce stuff in.
Yeah. Well, I initiated this campaign called Weird Fact Wednesday and another one called Sci-Day News. And so every week I come up with a different weird fact. The most recent one was for this week that the male water opossum is the only marsupial, one, that has a pouch, because it's mostly the females that have pouches, and also is like the only aquatic marsupial. And so the male has his pouch to like just tuck his testes in before going for a swim so that they don't get tangled and it all keeps neat and tidy.
That seems way over engineered.
But you know, it's coming up with, obviously I don't come up with facts like these. They exist. It's finding them. And yeah, just putting it together, and the weirder it is, my comms team meetings, they say that it's the most fun meeting of their week, because, you know, people can just be listening into their conversations and they're only hearing one part of it. They're just like, what testes, what's going on? So that's fun. But also for Side End News, that's every Friday, I put something out about some sort of recent publication. That, again, you know, is nice to sort of, again, keep my finger on the pulse, but also going, oh, what's out there? Like, what's new in the world of science? So that's always fun. Sometimes it's challenging to fill up a whole week, but I try and sometimes just, like, you know, do these sort of like promotional posts, because as an organization, ScienceWorks does need to sell tickets, get bums on seats, that kind of thing. But every time I do that, I try and think, can I sneak like a fact in here, or, you know, something that is a little bit of science as well as, you know, the straight up marketing. And I guess that's kind of why they wanted me involved, as someone with no marketing background, no like formal comms background, but someone who can bring a bit of science to the team. But the videos are really fun, and I don't do them all the time. They're like a special sort of treat, but coming up with a song and writing it, sometimes I use the sounds from an exhibition or from, you know, whatever it is that we're doing. So for example, the most recent thing was sound. We had the theme of sound for the school holidays, and there were certain things that were getting kids to experiment with and play with, and so I literally just used those items to make the sounds, plus my ukulele, and that was my song. So it's a very creative endeavor.
That is so cool. I think that's very impressive. Like, not just that you can do it, but then you're brave enough to share the videos is
the first fabulous. Video song I ever shared. It was lockdown, so I was alone. This wasn't for ScienceWorks. This was for me. It was about COVID, and I was very, very nervous. And I had, you know, our wonderful friend Jen was on a video call with me going like, yeah, you could do it. And so I press publish, and there we go. Yeah, I think, you know, I still kind of, I'm not saying I look to others for validation, but, you know, I do check things over with the team to go, you know, is this the kind of thing that our audience would want? Like, is this all right? I haven't taken anything too far or off the rails, but yeah. It's really fun.
I'm impressed. Very, very cool.
Thank you.
What was your path, say, from high school to where you are now? I'm assuming that this mosaic wasn't necessarily like what you envisaged in year 12.
It was not the plan.
Very rarely is. Yeah, what does that journey look like?
Well, the plan was medicine. Actually, like for a long, long, long time, it was, I'm going to be a doctor. And I was very seriously considering how my entire life would look, like where I would be working as a doctor. I would be a pediatrician. You can tell I really like kids. I actually thought, oh, and then I could like go and do play school for like a few years and then come back to medicine and like be a pediatrician, and then my patients would be like, oh, my doctor was on play school. Play school's still the dream. But yeah, I was going to do medicine, and then I didn't get a good enough UMAT score to do undergrad medicine. Mm-hmm. So that was off the cards. And then, so I applied for a Bachelor of Biomedicine and a Bachelor of Science, and I was just off, 0.05 off for Bachelor of Biomedicine.
I'm just going to pause you there because I'm really, really sorry. But like, I remember being told in year 12 that like, yes, you enter IATA, whatever, like, it's important then, but you won't remember the number, like, 5 years down the track. Mm-hmm. Oh, if you point something off anything, you remember.
Yeah,
you and do. And I still remember.
Oh, gosh, sorry. Is that a similar
sort of... Oh, no, I was just, like, off a round number.
Mm.
Oh, it still saddens me, but I'm Yeah, okay, sorry.
Well, it was off a round number as well because their cutoff was 99 that year. Oh, yeah, they raised it.
Oh, so close sorry.
To like a nice round number too. Yeah, so and you know, at the time I was like, could I have studied more? Well, yeah, definitely, because year 12 was the year that I decided to try even more extracurricular activities than I had ever done before. Like before school, recess, lunch, and after school, I was doing something. You know, I don't regret the things that I did that year. So sure, I could have studied more, but also, you know, I had a blast and I grew a lot because of all the things I did. So I was just off biomedicine. So I did science and I think in the end that worked out really well for me because it meant that I could do, I mean, I could have done it with biomedicine as well, but it meant that it was a little bit more flexible to do a concurrent diploma in languages at the same time and really make sure that my breadth was all the language Japanese so that I could finish in 3 years. And it meant that it was a little bit more flexible in terms of what subjects I did. And so I then worked really hard to get into postgraduate medicine. And I did not say that correctly at all. So I worked really hard to get into postgraduate medicine. And by that time I had experienced lab work. I had worked in a lab 1 day a week in my third year, and I was like, this is really fun. You know what? I might do a year of research. It didn't help that when the med interviews were happening, I was in Japan, and so I was kind of freaking out about the idea of doing a med interview while in Japan and coordinating all the timings and everything. So I was like, I'll save it for next year. So I withdrew my application that year, and they understood because they were like, that's an educational thing, because I was in Japan for study at the time. And so I put that off for a year and decided to do honours because there were some people that I wanted to work with, some projects that seemed really exciting. And so I did my honours year. And then by the end of that, I just couldn't imagine not going into the lab every day. And so at the end of that year, I had PhD scholarship, medicine. Which would you like to do? And as someone who didn't even get my first or second preference going into university from year 12 to then have two great offers by the end of university, it just goes to show that you really can work for it and find another way for it if you want to do something. Because, you know, I still did kind of really want to do medicine and so I worked hard for it. But I then decided on the PhD. And so it was picking up these different things along the way. Like I mentioned, homework group volunteering and I was working with rural and regional students and helping them get into university at sort of the high school level and working with InterScience, well, volunteering with InterScience. And yeah, that kind of just changed everything for me. And the more I did that was science communication, the more I was like, this is what I want to be doing. So it keeps changing.
And like, it's really, I feel, only by exposure to the possibilities that you can like actually work out what you want to do. Like how we,
for sure.
The idea that we're going to get 18-year-olds to decide what they're going to do when you can't like tell them every single thing that exists just seems a little ridiculous to me.
Yeah. And my mum actually thought it was, you know, a very good idea to choose to do medicine 3 years after. after year 12 rather than like at year 12 making that decision for your life. So, you know, that I at least had her going like, no, this is a good route. This is a good route.
Okay, mom.
I think you're absolutely right. And this is why I do pick up so many things, like even now, because it's I think important to work out what it is that you like to do as well as working out what it is that you don't like to do. That's just as important. And so the more things I try, the more I'm like, yep, this is the kind of stuff I like doing. And then also, perhaps I could leave this behind. Too much desk work. Nah, I'm good.
You're not alone in that one. Earlier, you mentioned like realizing that research wasn't for you longer term. What did that look like?
Partly it was the weekly seminars that I enjoyed going to listen to what people were talking about, whether it was within the department or external people who were sharing their cool stuff. It was fun listening, but I never really could come up with a good question. And I sort of noticed that about myself. And it's, I mean, most of the people who ask questions at these sorts of seminars were. So, you know, I sort of thought, oh, maybe I'll get there. But I never felt that I was really good at connecting dots and bringing data together to think about, okay, what next? I was good at the lab work, but less at thinking about what next, big picture, keep asking questions. So it was partly that. It was also seeing that people who were higher up in academia, they weren't in a lab. And if they were, there was one lab head that I knew of that who worked really, really hard, incredibly long hours, because they were doing both. They were doing the management, they were doing the grant writing, they were also working in the lab and producing a lot of data. And so I thought, well, the higher up you get in this lab, the less you're doing the lab work, which is what I really enjoy about this. So I don't want to be sitting there writing grants and writing papers and that kind of being it. So I think it was sort of both of those things, like realizing that I wasn't cut out for research and I perhaps could communicate my research and what I was doing well, because I was certainly winning prizes and things at conferences, but I think that was just about how I sold the research, not that I was like the best researcher. And then also seeing, yeah, no, that's not exactly what I want to be doing anyway, putting those together and going, ah, this is more fun. This is more me.
That's fascinating. That's like, because the second point that, you know, that the job that you go into as you go higher, you don't end up doing. That's a very common one across all jobs, pretty much. Mm, yeah. From teaching to tech. Yep, no, everyone. But yeah, being able to reflect and see that the way that you're synthesizing information isn't necessarily the way that you would kind of need to. That's really interesting reflection that you did to like be able to see that in yourself. So like, that's not common. I'm really curious if you, so you're in a position where things are very dynamic, you're getting opportunities and you ideally would have that like path forward idea in your head. Do you have any kind of structure that you use to, I guess, work out what you do want to be doing? Like, do you have reflection questions? Do you just like go with your gut? Do you have like some things that you could share?
Yeah, I've been participating in the Homeward Bound program, which is for women and non-binary people in STEM. And that's very much a leadership journey in professional development. And I've been encouraged through that to really think about my values and narrowing down, like, what are my work values? What are my personal values? And what are my values for relationships? And seeing, are they the same? How do I sort of not compromise? Cause I don't think it should feel like a compromise, but how do I balance these best to get the best out of everything for myself, for my work and what I want to do, and to ensure that you know, the relationships don't suffer for it. And I'm talking about, you know, all sorts of relationships, friendships, family, everything. And I think I'm getting better at working out that kind of balance across all three. I've also sort of been encouraged through that program to think about, from the values, like what am I, I guess, kind of like pillars, what are the things and my foundations, like what am I standing on, what's my experience, what do I want to do, what's my big goal, and really reflect on how am I going to get there. And at the moment for me it does involve talking to different people who have forged their different paths. And I'm talking to people who do very different things, because I think no one that I've seen is doing exactly what I want to be doing. And so I think having these conversations with people is making me think about, okay, I don't want to exactly get to this is the end point, but how can I weave this in? to my path. And it's really helping me reflect a little bit more on how I can get somewhere. But yeah, I think keeping my big goals in mind is important, and sometimes it does take someone to just sit down with me and have a think, because sometimes I can have that introspective thinking and sometimes I just do enjoy. And when I say enjoy, I mean I benefit from having these conversations with people very, very close to me. And with my partner in particular, we sometimes have what I think is a very difficult, challenging conversation. That's why I changed from enjoy to like, you know, it's good for me. So we have these conversations about like, what are you doing? where is this going? For every single thing that I'm doing, yeah, but why are you doing this? Like, it's great, great that you're doing this, but, and the more conversations I have like that, the more I am, I guess, pushed, I think. And sometimes I guess I need that little push to structure my life a little bit more and structure my goals and my future thinking a little bit more. Sorry, that was very rambly.
No, that was like, you covered off on a lot of really good points that, you know, I might borrow. No, that's fantastic. And like, I'm glad the program is providing some structure for that. And sort of sounds like it might be well timed for you in your career as well. But, you know, also high five to your partner, because it's, well, it's so easy.
I hate it and they know I hate it, but also, like, we both know it's good.
Yeah. But it's really easy as a partner as well to just be like, they know what they're doing. It's okay. I'll just step back. It's cliche, but growth doesn't happen when you're comfortable.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Have you got a big goal that you can share with us, or are they still secret?
It's not that it's secret. It's just, I guess, I'm still working out if this is still like the goal, because my goals have changed over the years. But what I would love to be doing is the Wiggles but science.
That's so cool.
I feel like it would tick so many boxes for me in terms of what I want to be achieving, like encouraging young people to be curious, to ask questions, to think about what are their STEM skills without them even thinking about STEM as a concept, but also working with young people, being creative, singing and dancing, science, bringing like new science, hot topics and new stuff like into it. Yeah, I just feel like it'd be everything.
There is a gap in the market that is shaped like that. Oh, I love that. I'm unfortunately in absolutely no position to like make it happen. But if I was, I'd be like, yes, that's a thing that should happen. That's fabulous. If it, you know, if it's still a goal in 6 months, like I reckon, surely you're in a position to make it happen in some way.
Yeah, well, I feel like doing these things like science is a superpower and writing my songs for science works and for me. It's coming together.
That's so cool. I can also imagine the adult spin-off. Might involve testicles.
Yes. Oh gosh, I've started a radio show and my first episode was the reproductive systems of marsupials, and so like that was one fact, but like they're very out there. It's very like for adults, but I mean,
I can just see this. Enjoy
things. Yeah, and adults enjoy these sorts of things too. Like I to fundraise for Homeward Bound, I did a bubble party for kids. Like it was a let me blow lots of bubbles, but also teach you the science of bubbles at the same time. And the kids loved it, but the adults loved it too. And they're like, "Do you do this for adults?" Like, yeah. And I was like, "Oh yeah, you just like bring some music, some colored lights, and like bam, same thing for adults, and they would love it." But yeah. Adults love very similar things to kids sometimes.
They do. They just need to be enabled and allowed.
Yeah. Oh, we're all kids at heart.
very much. Oh, I love that. We should probably head towards wrapping up. I am really curious if you have any advice, particularly for young Kat. Yeah, any advice for her?
Back yourself a little bit more, because I feel like as someone who has gone down a windy path, I guess I've just been unsure at a lot of different stages. Unsure of if I could achieve what I wanted to do. I mean, I guess I still gave you my overarching goal, going like, I don't know if it's going to be a thing though. Do I say it? Do I want to be recorded saying it? And yeah, just that sort of uncertainty of like, is what I'm doing like effective, and can I achieve these different things? Just sort of have a little bit more confidence that you've got this, but also finding your people and find them earlier than I did. It's such a game changer when you find the people who you do want to work with and the people who do lift you up and support you and put you forward for things and cheer you on. And I feel like I perhaps would be a bit a different person had I found them a little bit earlier in life. But I think just really making sure that me as young Kat, and also anyone else, like, finds their mentors and their support network, because once you have that in place, you can take those risks, you can you know, jump and you know, they're there to catch you, but also, you know, you're probably not gonna fall, so it's fine. yeah
I think that's excellent advice for most people, but also for you, like, now. Because I cannot think of anyone better to do Science Wiggles.
Oh, thank you.
I know a few people. Nope, there isn't one.
Well, thank you. There we go. I've got a cheerleader. I've got someone backing me. Backing me for this goal.
Yeah. Oh, man. If we start getting emails from parents being like, I would like this, please.
that's cool. The thing. I just don't have any experience with, like, you know, putting a show together and things like that. Like, and where does money come from to do this sort of thing? So, you know, I feel like ideas are there, but how to implement, that's the question.
Could you not start with National Science Week funding for like a single one-off show?
That's the plan for next year.
Oh, sorry.
No.
I'm like, I'm besting the future bubble.
No. I do need to apply and get my skates on, because applications close this month. But yeah, no, I have sort of thought about that. And I have, okay. I put together a 5-minute mini musical of the immune system with like different immune cell characters, and they're all their different personalities and things. And I have performed that twice. Well, I say twice. Once was like a 3-time performance thing. So an audience has seen it 4 times. And yeah, I mean, that was received well, like a 5-minute mini musical. So let's see how I can pad it out a bit. But it's, yeah. It was kind of fun to think about, oh, okay, macrophage, that immune cell, that is so Scottish. So I have like a Scottish immune cell, and then I have an immune cell that's like very, y'all can't even function without me. And yeah, it's fun.
That's excellent.
I don't know if that's just for you or if that's for the podcast. But
I'll let you wake up tomorrow morning and decide. That's so cool. Okay, but we should wrap up. So do you have a shout out for us, virtual high five, someone you think is doing an awesome job?
Oh my gosh, so many people. that's really hard. I think to you, do I have to like shout out one person?
No, you can pick multiple. I'm not gonna start a fight.
I mean, I see so many incredible people, you know, working with so many different people means that I see so many different rising stars. And I would say that a lot of the people that I work with at both the university and at Museums Victoria are incredible. And some of them are very early in their careers and have already achieved so much. But also, like, yeah, I, as someone who interviews different people for writing, for radio, for different things. I'm like, so many people are incredible. They're all doing amazing things and the world is full of talented cookies.
So we're just going to high five all the talented cookies?
Yeah, I'm going to high five all of the talented cookies so no one feels left out.
Love it.
I feel like I've cheated.
Oh yeah, that's a total cop out. But
it is.
It's also very understandable and it's true. So I would also like to double down on the high five for your partner supporting you through like all the dynamicness and also asking the hard questions. That's skills. So
yes, thank you. Thank you for keeping me on track, even if it's uncomfortable.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dr. Kat. This has been delightful and insightful, and I am genuinely curious to see what you do next. It's going to be awesome.
Thank you. Well, same to you. Like, yeah. And it's been a really lovely discussion. Just fun to chat.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, please pass it on to someone else who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you want to support Avid Research this year, that would be amazing. You can buy us a coffee. Head to avidresearch.com.au and there'll be a link, buy me a coffee, and you can support us with a one-off little coffee payment. Thanks so much for listening. You're a legend.